Available resources. Stay with us after that for Champaign Urbana Radio Theater at 7, Monday Night R&R at 8, live local music on West Sessions at 10, and recorded local music on Champaign Local 901. We're going to get to some underwriting real quick, and then we're going to jump into In the Know.
WEFT is supported in part by Kevin Elliott Counseling. Elliott Counseling Group has 35 counselors providing mental health services for individuals, families, couples, children, and groups. Evening and weekend appointments are often available immediately. Virtually all insurance, including State of Illinois employee insurance, is accepted, and there is also a self-pay sliding scale. Kevin Elliott or his staff can be reached at 398-9066 or ELLIOTT Counseling Group.com.
You are listening to In the Know. This is a public affairs radio show on WEFT 90.1 Champaign. The opinions expressed on the show are those of the host and the guests and not of WEFT. Tonight we're going to be talking about something that has been in the news really for forever. But with the recent administration, we've seen a lot of advocating for some pretty drastic changes. I'm going to let the guests in the studio introduce themselves, give some background on how they've been involved with work locally around the immigrant population, and then we're going to discuss what's going on currently with the immigration situation. So we're going to start over here, if you want to introduce yourself.
Hi there, I'm Thomas Garza. I'm the president of the CU Immigration Forum.
My name is Ricardo Diaz, and I am member of the board of the Immigration Forum, but New American Welcome Center would be a good balance to do that.
My name is Jocelyn. I am a part of Black Rose Rosa Negra Anarchist Federation and UIUC Ayuda.
Hello, Champaign Urbana. This is Brian Doliner, local writer for the Public Eye newspaper.
So there's always something, it seems like, hitting the headlines when it comes to immigration. So for those who take a blind eye and decide not to pay attention, what's going on right now with the current status of immigration work, federal level, even local level?
It's really hard to comment on this. I run into this all the time when I'm trying to explain what's going on, because there's what's being talked about, and then there's what's actually happening, and those aren't necessarily the same thing. So right now there's a lot being talked about. We've got the feds threatening to transport asylum seekers and dump them in sanctuary cities all around the country, just hundreds and thousands of miles away from where they come in, and things like that. But here locally, we have a lot of things, positive things, that are going on with local laws here in the state of Illinois. So it's a mixture of good and bad. It's kind of hard to explain.
Mm-hmm. What would you say right now are, you know, if somebody's, because I think when we talk about social justice issues, they seem so overwhelming. People don't want to get involved because they feel like, how am I going to even locally make a difference? So what would you say are the priorities on those two levels, both locally and on the national level? If somebody wanted to start paying attention, let's say they've been living under a rock this whole time, and they want to know, you know, really keep in mind what's going on, where would you say they should look?
Well, I think the greatest expression is an older one that's been around for a while, which is think globally and act locally. So look at what's going on in the world everywhere, and then look at where you live and try to think of what you can do right here at home to affect that in some way. For some people, it's just voting. Like, every chance you get, go vote and find out what your candidates support, and if they support things that you believe in, that's a big step right there. That's something that you can do. There are a lot of local organizations that are doing positive things for people on the ground, and it's you can get involved with them, or just, you know, give them money, or just give them a thumbs up every now and then, so they don't feel like they're laboring in the dark, you know. So that's what I would suggest.
Brian, you had the limited time with us this evening. What kinds of things are you working on right now that we can educate our listeners on?
Right now I'm working on social media, posting on Facebook, so thanks to everybody out there for listening. Right now, you know, I've been following ICE raids for the past year or two. It's been kind of quiet recently because of the new sheriff who was elected in November, for those who did vote. we have a new sheriff, Dustin Hermann, and he's ran on the Democratic ticket. He has spoken quite openly about his partner being Latino and having family members who are undocumented. And so that's really changed the tone and tenor around here. He has been explicit about not cooperating with ICE. And so since the new year, I haven't heard anybody being picked up by ICE here locally. So certainly there's other people in need, and there's a lot of need. But at least as far as ICE presence here, it's been tapered off. And so hopefully it stays that way. Otherwise, you know, we're following things we were talking about earlier, about the Dwight prison. We've been following the possible jail in Kankakee, the jail expansion in Kankakee. And we're just, I'm just sort of following locally these longstanding efforts for them to try to get a immigration prison in Illinois or hereabouts, which is what the Dwight prison is all about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think that with our new sheriff, I think that is a testament to how important it is to vote, because that is something that, you know, I think a lot of people were excited about, that we have somebody who is willing to take a new approach to this. I mean, at the very least, not cooperating shows that, you know, it's not something that we have to always fold to what the federal government wants us to do. You know, like you were talking about, locally can be so much different than federal. And so, you know, kudos to our new sheriff for making this a possibility. But like you said, I'm sure there's still families who want to keep moving in the right direction. So should something drastically change, you know, they're in a better spot with that. So tell us more about you, Jocelyn. Out of the four here, I know probably the least about you. So tell me about your background, what you're working on right now.
So I came to Champaign-Urbana as a student at U of I. I graduated last year in political science and Latino studies. I did a lot of on-campus organizing, and now with Black Rose and with UIU Sayuda, I've been trying to do more like outside of campus organizing. And so right now what I'm trying to work on is kind of, there's some community efforts in like Peoria and Bloomington Normal and things like that to organize against the Dwight Detention Center that was voted on March 11th by the Dwight Village Board. And so I don't feel comfortable depending on a sheriff or another elected official. Like, as a community, we should be able to respond appropriately regardless of who gets voted in or not, because that doesn't always go our way anyway. Especially talking about how people, it can be really overwhelming to get involved. I am working on, me and like UIU Sayuda are working on having sort of a teach-in, but also sort of like a community forum specifically on the issue of the detention center in Dwight, because if the detention center does end up getting built, there really is no doubt in my head, like regardless of who's sheriff or not, that people who would get picked up here would probably get sent there. So it's all sort of our community issue, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's coming up. I haven't set a date yet, but if people can follow like UIUCIU on Facebook, we have an email list and stuff. So we kind of try to send out updates, or we're trying to. So that would be one way to get involved. It's kind of really easy to find a lot of different events, whether it's like forums or teach-ins or things like that on Facebook or on Twitter, or all these different things, because like social media is, like you were saying before, it's what helps a lot to get that word out. So always showing up, like if you're able to show up, and then if you're able to ask questions or take a flyer, send out an email, that really is the only way to just get involved. So I really want, especially like the event that I'm trying to plan is specifically for people who aren't not currently involved in stuff. Obviously people who know more about it are obviously also welcome, but I definitely want, I know there's a lot of outrage and I think a lot of people just don't know where to go. And so I'm just trying to have like a community discussion and say like, well, what is it that we want to do, we can do, and what do we want to organize against?
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I'm trying to do.
That's great. Yeah, I mean, I think that's always the case, you know, it's where do we start? Where do we get involved? How do we get plugged in? And I think some people also feel slightly disheartened because they don't have an appreciation for the things they do on the local level that can make such an impact that can go all the way up to the federal level. I think that's where we've historically seen change, is it starts out local and it builds up from there. Go ahead, Brian.
Can I
Can we spend another minute to talk about Dwight?
Yeah. And
this is really super important. According to ICE themselves, the detention center, if built in Dwight, is going to hold people from 26 different jails throughout the Midwest. So yes, it's us and it's 25 other communities that could be impacted.
So where can they learn more information about the Dwight prison? I mean, is it something that, again, when people are trying to look for stuff in the news, but is there one place that they can go to find out more information about the purpose of it, what they can do to rally against it?
So I've tried to put together some, like, sort of put some articles together, some information together on the UIUC IUDA, which is UIUC AYUDA. And so sort of we have a little, like, sort of what we know now, what we kind of see coming or going on. And that's, like, one way. Also, we have, like, a script to call, like, local reps, because HB 2040, which is the law that everyone has been hearing about, well, at least a lot of people have heard about, is to sort of, the line that's been sort of spread is to ban private detention centers in Illinois. And so it's in the legislature. I believe it passed the House recently. And so all that kind of information is all on UIUC IUDA. There's also different pages, like different Facebook pages, like No Ice Dwight, like No Ban, No Wall Peoria. What is the other one? There's a couple. But yeah, so all those, those are where I've been hearing a lot of updates, but I've been hearing a lot of, like, sporadic sort of updates and not, like, too much, like, cohesion, which is why I try to put a little something together. And like I said, with the email list that I started, I'm trying to sort of send out, like, updates on, like, information updates, but then also, like, actionable updates. So yeah, it's definitely been kind of difficult, I think, specifically on this topic, even for me to find information. And that's, as someone mm-hmm. who is used to, like, organizing and kind of gathering the information I need. So I can definitely see where people might be a little lost or a little bit confused. But it just takes a bunch of people trying to find out information together. Like what you said about the 25 different counties, I wasn't aware of that. So
yeah. And you know, these places are picked because they're out of sight, out of mind. Mm-hmm. You know, Dwight, who even knows where Dwight is? You know, somewhere between here and Chicago.
Right.
It used to be home of a women's prison. So the local population is already primed. You know, they remember having these prison guard jobs, and these people are still around looking for work. This is part of a long struggle that, I don't know, is this 5-10 years old? There was an attempt to build an immigration prison in Joliet. Uh-huh. And our friend Jesse Hoyt helped to stop that. And then there was an attempt out in northwest Indiana to get the immigration jail built there. I had a friend out in Hobart, and I would drive out there, and there were just signs everywhere in everybody's front yards to keep the prison out of Indiana. And that was shut down, and so now they're trying to come back here into Dwight under the Trump administration, you know, the current federal campaign right now, that they're trying to sneak this into Dwight. So people from Chicago had largely been spearheading the efforts. And so I think now it's good to see more downstate people really taking up the cause of keeping this immigration prison, you know, this detention camp, this concentration camp, whatever you want to call it.
So, you know, Brian, one more question. Because if people, you know, are hearing, oh, well, we're going to have, this detention, you know, prison, and some people really don't have an appreciation for why that is such a bad idea. So if you could just speak to that for a second, you know, to help people understand why we should be opposed to this coming to our state.
Yeah, according to the feds, they've got some 50,000 people, almost 50,000 people in detention for immigration violations. And it's growing. It was 35K, 36K a couple years ago. It's been growing rapidly under the Trump administration. I follow groups like Detention Watch Network, DWN, who does really good work. This is a sign that it's not just the issue that's going on at the border, you know, that it's going on all throughout the heartland, you know, here in the Midwest, mm-hmm. that they're rounding people up in twos and threes and fours and fives, large work raids that have been taking place, dozens of people picked up in the cities, in surrounding suburbs of the cities,
you know, Chicago's a sanctuary city, Urbana's a sanctuary city, but still the feds are going around and picking people up there and are surrounding the cities and outlying counties, which are much more conservative. And so it's very widespread. You know, what I hear from people on the ground is that people are just really afraid to talk about their situation. You know, these are families under attack, and when they have somebody picked up and sitting in a facility, they're even more scared about talking about what's going on right now. So it's really hard to just get a pulse and a face of what's really going on right now.
So let's dial it back. Oh, you were going to say something. Go ahead, Ricardo.
Just an update on where the prison is. That is, there was a plan drafted, architectural plans. They landed it near Dwight. The village of Dwight has voted to annex the land and make a deal with the prison company. And now the prison company has to go back to ICE and say, we've got a location. It's going to be 2-3 years. But right now it's not on the local decision. The locals have already said that they can annex the land. There's other rules that have to be voted on locally, but let's say that the town of Dwight, or at least the leaders have said, have given a go-ahead to the annexation of the land.
Mm-hmm.
So it would be 2-3 years before that came back. In the meantime, the state bill that Jocelyn mentioned, the state bill that would bar towns in Illinois from making deals with private prison companies is before the legislature. It's already passed. So the bill would oppose having prison deals with prison companies. That bill has passed through the assembly last week, and so now it goes to the Senate. So that's the state of affairs. The locals have gonna go ahead. The state level is saying no, and if we're lucky in the next couple of weeks, then that bill will bar towns like Dwight from saying yes to companies. So that's just straight out status.
Thank you for sharing that. So, you know, to kind of dial it back for a second, again, I think when, you know, it's so easy when things don't affect you personally to not be involved, turn a blind eye, or even to have the opposite, you know, opinion that this is good for our, you know, our country, our communities. So, you know, there's always this, well, why can't people just become documented? Why can't they just become citizens? There's always, like, you go down to the DMV and get your license or something. It's so, you know, since I became interested in this when I was in my undergrad program, you know, I've been looking at just the arduous process that there is to have this happen for people. Even when I was leaving right before, somebody asked me, what's your show on tonight? And I said, immigration. And they said, oh, not that again. And they said, why can't they just, you know, go and, you know, get their papers and, you know, yada, yada, yada. And I said, I'll talk to you later about this. There's more conversation here. But it's not that simple. We know it's not that simple. But just so our listeners understand, what is the process and what is the average time when we're talking about people just becoming citizens? Because I love that phrase, just become a citizen. Because it's not that simple. We've talked about this before. What do you say as far as when people say, just go out and get your documentation and be a citizen?
There's so many different aspects to it.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to even know where to be. I mean, that is a difficult question to answer because you can say, well, it's not that easy. That's the simple question. And they go, well, why not? Well, because there's these hoops you have to jump through. But everybody's situation is different. So it's not like there is a one-size-fits-all answer to that.
Mm-hmm.
My difficulty in becoming a citizen might be very different from yours because of your relationships, your family relationships, your marital status, what country you're coming from, when you applied, you know, whether you have any kind of criminal background, or even misdemeanors and things like that. So I never quite know how to answer that question, because all I can say is that it's just really hard for people to do it, and the government is working right now to make it even harder for people to do. So one problem is just simply time. There's a backlog. There's a process that you go through, and if you were the only person going through that process, then it could be accomplished maybe in, you know, a few months or a year or so. But you're one of maybe 100,000 people trying to go through that very process. So that's like you go to the back of the line or the middle of the line, or you can jump ahead or sideways or something. And so even the simplest case can take forever simply because there are all these people in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. Does anyone have a better response to it than I do? Because I don't think I'm explaining it very well.
I mean, I would just say that it is extremely difficult. Like, there is no line that you just get into and all of a sudden you're in the process. There's a lot, and there's also a lot of fraud, a lot of exploitation of these communities, and that's not an accident. Like, yeah. The reason why it's so difficult, like, beyond the specifics of how it's difficult, it's also the reason why it's difficult. And that's because at the end of the day, like, when you look at, like, the history of immigration, it has always been, like, a workers' issue as well. Like, when you look at immigration in, like, the U.S. history, like, except before ICE and the INS, like, every other, like, immigration issue or, like, visa and stuff went under, like, the Department of Labor, pretty much. Like, so immigration has always been an issue of labor, and the purpose being creating an exploited working class in order to pay them less, and sort of create the sphere and all of this, like, all of this sphere to, like, demand, like, better pay or better treatment, to ask for, like, the safety of them, like, of undocumented immigrants, their families, and their home, like, all these different aspects of it. So it's not just the how, it's the why, and the why is very obviously purposefully used as a way to create a class of exploited people. And so I think that's like the broader issue as well. I think also people get really overwhelmed in the sense of, well, how are we gonna fight against like ICE? How are we gonna fight against, like, this huge, like, thing, right? This, like, state agency. But also keeping in mind that a lot of communities, even just in the Midwest, have fought this and won. Mm-hmm. A lot of times. That's why ICE is still looking for a center, because in Indiana, in Illinois, all over the place, these fights have been going on. And so we need to people who, like, understand these or want to understand more about these issues and how they affect people's everyday lives and how they're just trying to survive. People who understand that's an issue, we can get together and sort of fight it. Like, it's not impossible. It's difficult. It's not mm-hmm. going to be easy, but it's also, for me, it's also not an option to not do anything about it. So,
well, and I think that's something that has come up with, you know, why do we have business owners who employ people and don't fight for them on their behalf? And so there's maybe an answer, you know, in what you said to that question of, you know, you have all these business owners who are benefiting from these workers. What happens if, you know, they're deported and, you know, all just tied up in the system in general? So that is a, you know, a good response to that. Maybe there's a purpose in not, you know, coming to their rescue per se. Go ahead, Ricardo.
Just my just then triggered a thought. There are processes. They may be hard. They may be complicated. But the fact is that most of the people, when somebody says, why doesn't that person follow legal path, is what they're asking. And the simple answer is because there isn't one for that person.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
When you have dishwashers, when you have agricultural workers, the number of visas for non-immigrant workers is so small, and I'm talking in the tens of thousands, where they would come in for just a few months and then they would leave. The actual need and the number of people that are presently employed are in the hundreds of thousands and millions. So if the federal government says there's only 40,000 H1, H2 visas, which are the agricultural workers, 40,000. That's not even a couple of counties in California sometimes. Mm. And so for the rest of them, there are no legal paths. So for me, my thought has always been, until they make it cheaper and easier to come legally, people will come because there is a job for them and it's convenient for the worker. So if there is no path and if there is no legal path and the only path is an illegal one, or one that remunerates them a little bit more than the risk is by walking the border or whatever else, people are gonna take it, such as their desperate situation back home. So why don't they follow a path? Because there isn't one for them. That's the short answer for me.
Yeah. So I think it's also important to look at, like, the foundation of all these things. Like, why do people feel the need to leave, like, their home, right? Like, most people don't want to leave, like, their home if they're, like, in a different country. A lot of people don't want to leave their, like, family, their, like, history, where they grew up, right? But a lot of times, sort of like U.S. intervention in a lot of other countries, especially like specifically like in Central America, has caused so many migrating now who are refugees and asylum seekers, like in the caravans that we've been seeing, it's directly caused by U.S. intervention in those countries. So we also got to look at like that history, as well as we don't like the U.S. doesn't benefit from creating a path, so we don't have one. And also looking at the fact that the freedom of movement has just always been something that like thinking of the artificial nature of like laws and the reason why like these borders exist. They don't exist because they benefit me. Like personally, I don't benefit from borders, right? But let's say like companies benefit from creating borders, from creating, making it difficult for poor people to travel through them, right? But when people are looking for a job, specifically when you, and like to survive, specifically when you see having to leave their homes because the U.S. has basically crashed their economy, then you would see like not only is the U.S. Making it impossible for people to stay in their land, like in their home, but also making it impossible for them to live and survive a non-terrorized life in the U.S. Yeah. So it's like a push and pull, like where are undocumented immigrants and their families supposed to go? What are they supposed to do? They can't stay in the land where they were because they will die because of the violence or about starvation. So when they get here, they get exploited. So
that's always the question: is why don't you just stay in the country that you're at? And, you know, they talk about the reality versus the headlines of, you know, the caravans. When we talk about that, we're talking about people traveling long distances and risking their lives in that process. I mean, they're bringing their children, their infants. You know, this isn't something that they just woke up one day, like, you know, some college student said, hey, I'm going to take a road trip to California. This is actually moving their life. And so what kinds of circumstances are they leaving? You know, that's the question that people don't really have that appreciation for, because we were born here, we have our rights. You know, we migrate through our own country for jobs, for we just want a new scene. Those are very simple, very first world problems. And so, you know, this idea that people can't understand why somebody would have a much greater cause to move where they are. We're not going on a vacation. We're not moving for a job per se. We're moving for a better opportunity, which can include a job, but this is a better opportunity. So what are the circumstances that you've seen or heard of from people that you've worked with as far as why they're leaving? Because I think some people just don't understand that.
I mean, it's a broad question. As Tom said, there are, every person is different. Mm-hmm. But I think you alluded to, we have freedom of movement within the U.S. Why does anybody move?
Mm-hmm.
Because eventually there is something that's drawing you. Mm-hmm. I have a son who's moving from Utah to Washington. Why? Well, some of it is adventure, but really a job.
Mm-hmm.
If there's a good job far away from your family, then you start weighing things. So those are the pull factors, you know, things you get better paid here in the U.S. than you would in your own country. You get better paid in the cities than in the countryside.
Mm-hmm.
So people move for that. There's a pull to certain spots, but there's also push. And I think that's the part that for us is incomprehensible, because we're usually in towns that are not pushing us out.
Mm-hmm.
That is, we have, you know, the local police works, the government services work when it comes to roads and whatever else. But there's also, so most people, what eventually pushes them out is the very bottom of the Maslow pyramid. That is when they fear, when they can't get their basics taken care of, or they can't see it becoming better for their children. That is, if I stay, my children will have the same miserable life that myself and the previous generations have had. Why would I want that for my children?
Mm-hmm.
Right? So that is like a push. I cannot stay here and let my children grow up to have the same meager subsistence that I can have. So that's an economic push. But there's also in Central America, especially recently, has been that the governments aren't functioning, especially as to safety. Would you stay, Sherry, in your house if you couldn't walk out and arrive at work?
Mm-hmm.
If every day you had to be wondering whether you could actually come back to the house without getting kidnapped or shot, would you stay in this town?
Mm-hmm.
And those are the push factors. There's economic, there's a safety factor, and then there's the fact that psychologically you start realizing that I cannot be here anymore and hope that tomorrow is going to get better.
Well, we talk about that even locally when, you know, people move to, you know, our border areas like Monticello, Mahomet, St. Joe, because they want better school districts for their children. That's a move. I mean, and that's not even that far. You have people who have talked about, you know, we talk about, and, you know, historically we've had white flight out of the major urban places like Chicago. And so, you know, these are reasons to meet, like you were saying, Ricardo, basic human needs. And again, if you're not having to vie for those basic needs, if they're not threatened on a daily level, if you don't feel like your safety is in jeopardy at any point, it's hard to understand why somebody would make such a drastic move, not to move, you know, 15 miles away, but to move 1500 miles away, you know, even farther than that. You know, people coming from you know, other countries in Europe and farther away. These are measures, like you were saying, they're taken because they want safety for themselves, better opportunity for themselves, and that trickles down to whatever children that they have.
I also wanted to add as well, like those are all really important factors as well. I would also point out the amount of sexual violence that happens. And of course, that's not just like inherent to like any country, right? That's everywhere. But when you have all these other factors being exacerbated, right? Like poverty or like this feeling of like unsafety, gendered violence also goes into it, as well as a few of the caravans who came, like we saw last year, a couple of them were actually like LGBTQ specific, because a lot of people fear for themselves based off of their gender identity and their sexuality as well. So that's also something I wanted to add. Another thing that I really felt like sort of last, I guess, during like fall when we were organizing, we did, so UIUCIU that has been like raising money for a while. And so last semester we raised about $3,000 for the caravans that we sent out. And during one of our rallies, we shared a poem. It's called Home by Warsan Shire. She's a British Somali poet. And like the first line of the poem is, no one leaves home unless home is the mouth of a shark. You only run for the border when you see the whole city running as well. And so this poem is like beautiful and extremely heartbreaking, because it kind of shows the truth of like what everyone has been talking about so far. It's like, you don't leave your home unless you absolutely have to, unless you see like death coming at you, unless you see like no hope. And so I don't know, I mean, it's also just like a very fundamentally human issue. Like I could never blame someone for leaving or moving because they're trying to find a better life for themselves, for their kids. And so I think that's also something to like think about when you're saying, when somebody says, well, maybe they should just do this differently. It's like, well, they're trying to survive. Like, how else are they going to do it, right?
Well, I think our country's so spoiled in some ways, because we just had the college admission scandal that broke the news a few weeks ago. And we're talking about people paying hundreds of thousands of dollars just to get their kids into college. So we're talking about, we understand in this country about opportunity, vying for it, but we have everything we need to get from point A to point B. The same people who sit there and say that college admission scandal, like, how could those parents do that? It's funny, they also might also be the same people who say, but I don't understand why people are traveling all this distance for a better opportunity for their children. So it's a weird dichotomy that we have sometimes in our country, where people can understand one thing but not another.
I guess for me, what we've been talking about is the micro level, the individual, mm-hmm. the individual or individual mm-hmm. families' decisions to make a break to a different situation. Eventually, all that gets aggregated to the macro decisions, in which then if at home the two parents decide something, then their family will go in that direction. When you aggregate it and you start seeing things, then it's not just those individual decisions that are moving, it is the politicians' decisions. And so, As Tom said at the beginning, what is being talked about, that's what they deal with, because it's the social impact, the demographic changes, the economic, but certainly the economic power. Mm-hmm. And for me, we might as well address it. When the president puts something out, it's for his political gain.
Mm-hmm.
It is not for you, for me, or for even his base. We have known him enough that he wants to do something. So whether it's closing the border, whether it's sending people to sanctuary cities, he bursts with those kind of, I don't know, crazy ideas. Ultimately, what we have seen over the last 2.5 years is that those ideas are not being tolerated by the courts. luckily we have a balance system, or we're striving to have a balance system in which there is a judicial and there is a Congress that can put a stop to, or even just don't consider anymore the junk that the president might put out, even his own party often. But the fact is that in the courts, most of what he has proposed has not worked, has not been accepted, and has yes, it has increased the fear, but there are maybe two or three proposals that he has put forward that have actually stuck in the courts. Mm-hmm. The rest eventually get rolled back, and then he fires the people, and then he puts in, you know, more scary people. But on the national scene, I can document almost every single decision that has been pushed back. And that is from family separations to the only things that have changed over the last 2.5 years are like things like the fees, or the Muslim ban eventually went through when it was made softer. But things really haven't changed on the ground because people still get the same background check. So et cetera, et cetera. So the national side for me is a lot of bombs bursting in air.
Yeah.
Really very little. So I want to come back to the local, that is the receiving communities, the Urbana-Champaign, the Champaign County, because we are all involved in that, and I think mm-hmm. that we should give it some time because there are many good organizations. This is a very friendly bubble in our county, and we should talk about it more so we can keep on strengthening that.
Well, and we have like the second or third highest international population at our university. We should be, you know, aligning with that we shouldn't just be welcoming for people who are paying tuition to keep an institution alive. This is supposed to be, you know, diversification, because I've grown up here, and that was, I've had family who've worked on campus for a long time, and that was really one of the messages, was we are inclusive. That's our strength, is we have so many faculty from, you know, a certain background. We have so many students from, you know, these different backgrounds. But, you know, kind of speaking to the fear that he tries to instill in everybody. I remember one of the last scenes in the movie, The American President, where Michael Douglas gets up and he finally speaks out against his opponent. And he said his opponent is only interested in two things. He's interested in making you afraid of it and telling you who's to blame for it. And that was really his campaign. And that's really been his presidency this entire time, is making people afraid of what they don't understand. You get all these things where, again, we're talking about Maslow's hierarchy. If they are here, then they're taking our food, they're taking our jobs, they're, you know, doing all of these different things that are jeopardizing our, you know, well-being. And if you look at statistically how that actually comes out on paper, it's not what they think it is, which is so disheartening to me that people just jump on that kind of a bandwagon. So do you think that's part of the fear that we're seeing? You know, people are worrying about their basic needs being met because we have, you know, immigrants in our population. I mean, even though they're the same people who will walk into a restaurant and be served by an immigrant. But again, not tying those two things together. What do you think, Tom?
Go ahead.
I was just gonna say, I don't think those are two separate things. Like the fact that someone feels comfortable with an undocumented immigrant serving them, and someone that says that they feel uncomfortable by the possibility of a like undocumented immigrant like living like public life and like being happy and like maybe getting like a job where they're not in like a subservient position. I don't think those are two things that people don't realize are happening. I think it's very much tied to sort of like the history of the U.S. and the history of what the U.S. has been created upon, which is slavery and settler colonialism. So there isn't like it isn't just like I don't. It's like I don't. This sort of rhetoric that I hear is like I don't understand why they accept like they like they don't think that it's a big deal when like it was white Russian moms having kids in like Florida or something, and that mm-hmm. was seen as like a cute funny thing. But of course, yeah. This whole idea of like, well, like black and brown women like have too many babies, and that's not just like, oh, it's funny when they do it, and it's not funny when like brown and black women do it. But the reality is, it's like it's okay when they do it, but then like black and brown women face like eugenics, right, and like mm-hmm. forced sterilization. So all this rhetoric of like, oh well, we don't understand why. Like I think it's very flawed and it's very dangerous. I think also this idea that Trump hasn't really caused that much harm, I think is also for me, it doesn't sit very well with me because to say, well, he did the Muslim ban, but then it was rolled back. Well, at the same time, like, how many people died? Because, like, there was, like, multiple stories of, like, people dying because they couldn't get treatment. Those 2,000-plus children that are, like, going to be forever traumatized, those, that's not, like, a little bit of harm or a little bit of fear. So I feel, like, very uncomfortable with that statement being said earlier. I say, and it's also not, again, what happens globally happens locally. So it's not just about what Trump, whatever, says and what, like, or and what he does. It's also the effect that he has on all these people. Like, the amount of hate, like, hate crimes has increased, like, substantially in the past 4 years, right? Or, like, however long he's been, like, a public-ish figure now. So I think sort of, like, normalizing this, or, like, even, like, normalizing conversation of like fascism, and like normalizing conversations of like making it seem normal that that kids being locked up is just something that has happened, or this idea that detention centers are anything besides like concentration camps and prisons.
Well, I think the issue is it's setting a bad precedent is what, you know, I'm getting from you. And I think that's dangerous all by itself, regardless, because, you know, we have things, news now that's saying that different states are voting for harsh, very, very harsh punishments, which I don't even know why we're looking at it that way, for women, for instance, who have abortions. What I've always said is, if we don't protect everybody, then anybody can be at risk, because it just depends on who the administration is, whether it's local or federal. When we allow our government to say, we get to pick and choose, this is our cafeteria, this country's our cafeteria, to pick and choose who we're going to protect, who we're going to penalize, I think that's when it becomes a slippery slope. And people who are more up at the top, or along with the one percenters, again, don't have that appreciation, because they feel like those rights are never going to be jeopardized. Versus everybody below them, I think it's a free for all. So what you're saying, the precedent that he set, you know, when they were talking about even just his deviant sexual behavior, oh, it's okay, you know, he didn't really do this, or he did. But again, it's the words, it's the language, it's the mentality, it's what you're supporting when people are kind of coming out of the woodwork and saying, oh, but this is what we understand, this is what we agree with. And now, what I think was kind of a false sense of security this whole time, that we had racism under control and we had these things under control, we're seeing just how much we didn't. But I think the one silver lining of anything with Trump's administration is he is getting people to come out of the woodwork on the other side. So we're seeing more grassroots efforts. We're seeing more people who are interested in taking back their country because they don't agree with this. And they may even have an appreciation that they could come after me for being, you know, a white Catholic someday, just because they decide all of a sudden we don't like Catholicism. So I think people are starting to get, we all may have a bullseye on us in some way if we don't find a way to check our administration. You know, I think that's one of those things a lot of people are talking about more, is how we get this under control, which is a big reason why there was so much talk about the local election and bringing in the current sheriff, is people were saying, we have to change something. We can't keep doing this. We have to find a way to do this better. And they did. They elected somebody who has decided not to cooperate with ICE.
So let me agree with the fact that there is a Trump effect that is very negative, and that it is not just on immigration that he has been creating waves and waves of hurt, damage, and death. Mm-hmm.
Which is crazy to say that a president did that.
Let me also put in parallel the narrative that in this county, for the last 8 years, the previous sheriff, a Republican, had also agreed not to deport people straight from jail and not to turn people over to ICE unless there was a warrant, a judicial warrant, a real warrant, to come pick up the person. In the last 8 years, as Immigration Forum, as we have had our fights with the different levels of government, it continues to be true that this is a very friendly place, that while ICE does come in and take some of our people, we still have at least 24,000 foreign-born that not only, and that's without the student.
I was just going to ask that, is that with or without students?
That's right. And that they are not just the busboys, they are also our doctors, they are also the owners of stores, they are also, while there's landscapers built in, there are also lawyers that are foreign-born, there are also professionals in almost every realm, whether it's my present doctor, My primary physician is foreign born. My dentist isn't anymore, but she used to be. That is all across our society. There, of this county, there's a $1.4 billion economic impact by the foreign born. This is not small. These are the educators in our community. These are the ones that organize. And out of the 5-6 groups that have been created over the last 2-3 years to help immigrants, to help the foreign born, of course we have to concentrate on the ones that are adjusting because they don't have a lot of help.
Mm-hmm.
But we should not forget that there are thousands and thousands of people here that are also immigrants that are also trying to figure it out and make this place a home.
Mm-hmm.
Champaign County has a large population of foreign born, and it includes the ones that are being exploited and the ones that come here for economic opportunity. And it includes the owners of electrical harnesses and the professors at the university that are inventing things.
Mm-hmm.
The foreign born come with all kinds, just like there are local people. So one last, and I sorry because I got on this rant, but for me, we should not forget that they're all. When we talk about international migration, we often talk not only of why people are pushed out, but there are people that actually leave because they want to.
Mm-hmm.
It's usually referred to as a brain drain. You see it out more recently in Africa, but in almost every country that has political turmoil, the middle class and those that can leave legally will hop to the next place where it might be better for them. Mm-hmm. There is a brain drain going on, but if there is a brain drain that's leaving those countries without certain people, then that means it's draining to where?
Mm-hmm.
Where are those people going?
Mm-hmm.
There are places like the U.S., like the European Union, where people go to because they have prospects of a better future.
Mm-hmm.
The drain is towards our benefit, and we should not forget that that happens at the education, at the high education level, but also at the lower one. When a worker comes and eventually gets hurt, what happens to that worker? Our system doesn't want them, and in fact, they often go home. And their home country takes care of them when they're hurt, when they're too old, or whatever else. So we are the net benefiters of the foreign born, whether we accept it or not, and whether people steer our fears or not. We are still great benefiters of what the people that come bring.
Mm-hmm. So in the last few minutes of the show, I want to make sure that we, you know, let the listeners know how they can get involved, because again, there are people who are, you know, rallying with this community now to try to make an impact on a variety of different levels. So where, you know, if somebody comes up to you and says, you know, I'm interested in getting involved with the efforts in Dwight, where would you tell them to plug in if they say, I want to help to make sure that this doesn't become a reality?
You want to take them up? No Ice Dwight for me is where I go for it, both information and organizing. That's who organized the last two presents in Dwight. In Springfield, those bills, it is a simple phone call away. In this case, it's call our Senator Bennett for this county and tell him to vote yes on House Bill 1042. So as far as Dwight, for me, those are very easy steps. You go there and you find out what's going on. So No Ice Dwight is a Facebook hashtag. So for that, if somebody wants to volunteer, whether it's the Refugee Center, whether it's the New American Welcome Center, whether it's CU Fair through their church, just ask around if their church is already a member of CU Fair, or on campus, whether it's Three Spinners, High Cause, there are many different organizations where they can go and volunteer. This month, it's especially concentrated on fundraisers. So last Saturday, the New American Welcome Center through the University Y had its fundraiser. They're still on a capital campaign. That's a good place to donate. This Wednesday, the Immigration Project, the lawyers that help us have people become legalized, have their status, they're having a lunch at Vineyard. And if you go to the Immigration Project on Facebook, you'll get the details for that. On the 27th, the Refugee Center is having its dinner and auction. It's a great place to also sign up. They all just moved, several of the service agencies just moved over there by the health district. The Champaign County Health District offices. So they've just relocated. There's plenty of room to take in more. And if you want to help somebody learn their English or reading, just basic literacy, we have plenty of needs like that. And you go to Project Read at Parkland, and you become a volunteer, and you get assigned to somebody. So there's both on money or mind space, you know, to just do your email. But there's also, it's very rewarding to show up and help and do something directly with immigrants. So those are all opportunities that are active, they're rewarding, and they help the situation become better.
Any other things you want to add, Jocelyn, yeah. Tom?
And if you're interested in getting directly involved with putting up a collective, like a community collective response to the detention center in Dwight, you can follow UIUCAU on Facebook. It's UIUCAYUDA or UIUCAYUDA@gmail.com. If you have any questions or want to be added to an email list or want to sort of help create events, the public forum I was talking about and things like that, that would be one place to start.
Any other ideas you want to share? No? I mean, I think there's definitely, like you were saying, there are good efforts here in Champaign. I mean, we are a town that is very grassroots. You know, our station even has two calendars where we have constant, you know, updates of different community organization activities going on, how people can get involved, or even just, you know, like you were saying, there's so many different organizations and agencies here locally to learn about. Just go to their Facebook page, go to their websites, figure, you know, where you can fit in these types of efforts. You know, having come from a background of working with all and volunteering with all sorts of different organizations, there's always something they can have you do. Always, always, always. You know, I was talking to a friend of mine about the importance of having this immigration discussion on a regular basis so people are aware of what the priority is right now, because that can change as things develop, you know, with like the Senate bills or whatever else happens. You know, there's always something new that can, you know, be prioritized. But it's definitely an important topic that I think people should pay attention to, because when you walk into your grocery store, when you walk into your office, when you walk in just about anywhere, you have no idea the person next to you, what their story is and what their struggles are. We know we talk about as a community, you know, how we band together to help everybody, but sometimes you can't help everybody. Find that group that you can, you know, go across the street to the family if you think they're an immigrant family, introduce yourselves, find out how you can help them. Very, very simple ways like that. I think the one thing that sometimes we forget about is that need for the organic connection, you know, just knowing people, knowing their story, hearing what they have. At one of our coalition meetings, Lucia Maldonado shared stories from students, and it was just so impactful because you're talking about kids who have said that their house has been raided in the middle of the night. That's crazy. I don't think anybody could imagine, unless you've been a part of it, what that can feel like. So, but definitely share all these different things. I'm going to get them up on my Facebook page. I'm going to share them with other different groups. WEFT is happy to promote this as much as possible. But this, of course, is always just one more conversation about this topic. I'm sure we'll be talking about this for a while. Any last things you want to let the listeners know before we go? Go ahead, Tom.
I just wanted to say one thing in terms of the simplest. If you're wanting to be involved and do something, the simplest thing you can do is talk to people. Just talk mm-hmm. to your friends. Talk yeah. to your family. Anytime you hear somebody say something that's a little weird, just mention it. Like, why did you say that? What do you mean by that? What's the point of that? Because we're very social creatures, and mm-hmm. we operate on peer pressure. Like right now in this room, we all sort of more or less agree on this, so we're all pretty happy to be together. But if there was someone here who was like, you know, really disagreeing, or if everybody disagreed and I'm the only one who thinks that, then I would feel very alone. So just say something, that's all. And that doesn't require very much time. It doesn't require a whole lot of knowledge. It doesn't cost you any money.
It's just discussion.
It's just anytime you hear the topic come up, make a comment. And if everybody does that, it changes the conversation in a big way. And I think that's important.
I was in a room full of people not terribly long ago. It was last summer, I think. So maybe about right about this time. But we were talking about immigration, and there were very loud group of conservatives in that room. But they were all people that I had networked with and been a part of different work that they'd done. It wasn't a huge group, but they were talking about, interestingly, they were talking about wanting to help the community, but they were opposing a lot of the work around immigration. And I thought, well, that doesn't quite gel. And so somebody had made a comment that I did not like at all. It really upset me. And I said, well, I want you to know that I was born in Mexico. I'm not from this country. You know, I wasn't born here. I said, however, I got the luck of the draw where I was adopted. And so I'm a legal citizen. I don't have to worry about these things. I said, but what if we had had different rules and different policies in place where I would not have been allowed to come to Champaign, Illinois? I said, all the work that you just complimented me on doing might not have happened. Okay. So again, think about this. Think about this in a different way, that it's not just black and white.
My last comment has to do with two initiatives that are going on now that people should be aware of and should engage with. One is that we are developing an immigrant integration plan that will last our county for 5-10 years. It's being run through the New American Welcome Center. There are committees for every sector: health, law enforcement, economic development. It's a great way to get involved, to be part of the conversation, how to make things better. The next one is one that the cities and are most interested in, but the service organizations were also involved in, and that is Census 2020 is coming up. We're preparing for it. The number of foreign-born in our area are a large number and very positively impacting our community, but we still need to count everybody, and the foreign-born are particularly hard to count, so it would be very nice. There's meetings, once again, through the Welcoming Center or through the Immigration Forum. You can find out more information. Those two initiatives are very positive, forward-looking, and will continue to make our community stronger because of the presence of immigrants.
Wonderful. Well, thank you guys for being on the show. Again, we will be having this discussion, so you'll all be invited back to share, you know, the progress that you're making with all the different efforts that you have. I will be posting as much information about the different initiatives we shared here tonight. If you are interested in more information, reach out. I'm happy to connect you to the guests who are in the studio tonight, as well as to the different websites where you can go to learn more information. Everybody have a good evening and enjoy the wonderful weather.
Ooh, child, things are gonna get easier. Ooh, child, things will get brighter. Ooh, child, things are gonna get easier. Ooh, child, things will get brighter. We'll get it together and we'll get it all done. Someday when your head is much lighter. Someday, yeah, we'll walk in the rays of a beautiful sun. Someday when the world is much brighter. Ooh, child, things are gonna get easier. Ooh, child, things will get brighter. Ooh, child, things are gonna get easier. Ooh, child, things will get brighter. Someday, yeah, we'll get it together and we'll get it all done. Someday when your head is much lighter. Someday, yeah, we'll walk in the rays of a beautiful sun. Someday when the world is much brighter. Child, things are gonna get easier. Ooh, child. Ooh, child. Things will get easier. time.